Utah's 3rd congressional district candidate, Case Lawrence, is in the Uinta Basin today for the annual Uinta GOP Lincoln Day dinner. Good afternoon. I'm Steve Evans with Evans Family Media. Welcome to the Uinta Basin, Case Lawrence. Tell us a little bit about your background and your family. It's good to have you here.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here in the Uinta Basin. And I'm glad to talk about my background. I'm coming into this race as a political outsider from the private sector. This is my first ever attempt at elected office. I've spent my life as an entrepreneur, and I have all the scars and ups and downs to show for that. In particular, I come from the indoor entertainment business.
Ooh, what is that?
It's indoor trampoline parks, indoor playgrounds for kids. I started that business back in 2011 out of the ashes of the Great Recession. I had been in the real estate industry and ran into the buzzsaw of the financial crisis and the recession. And, you know, was at a crossroads in my life financially and career-wise, and ended up starting what began then as a small business and has now grown into the largest indoor entertainment company in the world. We have over 300 facilities, over 5,000 employees. Our company is called Sky Zone. And I have, with that and with the financial crisis I mentioned, I bring some unique perspective and experience into this race in that I have been on the front lines of every major economic crisis of our generation. The tech crash in the early aughts, the real estate crash in 08, 09, and then again with COVID and the shutdowns. Being in the consumer entertainment business, our trampoline parks were shut down for an average of 7.5 months net across the globe. So that was a big crisis for us. So I have faced every one of those crises. I've entrepreneured and problem solved our way out of that. And I think that's a big part of the perspective and experience that I bring to this race.
How will that perspective help you be a better congressional representative?
Yeah, I think it, I think the, first of all, being a leader and being able to lead others into solving problems and work as a team to get things done, including legislation, I think that's important. And it's important to have people serving in these roles who have experience doing that in the real world, and I do. I plan on being a team player and a team leader. One of the things we've learned in the Republican Party is that we need to be smarter team players. We've learned that over the last year. And I think it's important to have leaders who can go back and help make that happen.
You have your son with you here for the Lincoln Day dinner, and it was nice to meet him. Do you feel that there's a trend moving away from patriotism, especially among younger adults like your son, here in Utah and both nationally, and what can be done to maybe change that trend?
I hope not. I think there's always a concern sometimes as we look at the younger generation, that maybe there's some apathy or some lack of urgency about the values and the things that we know are so important and that we've learned over the course of a lifetime. I actually have faith in the rising generation that their life experiences and what they're seeing in our country, which, by the way, is devastating right now. I think that there's actually a lot of factors that are going to drive a resurgence in that patriotism and in that concern for our country, because we've got such urgent problems. It's hard, I don't care how young you are, to be oblivious and ignorant to forces that are destroying this country. And so I'm actually optimistic and hopeful.
A lot of Americans have lost trust in the electoral process, especially with the 2020 election. Do you feel that there have been some shenanigans that have happened with the election in 2020, with the presidential election? And what can we do to reestablish that trust?
You know, it's very important to be precise about exactly what happened in the 2020 election, because language matters. Without question, that election was unlike any we've ever had. The COVID restrictions and the changes in the rules for the election because of COVID allowed ballot harvesting on a scale that we've never seen and would normally be against the rules. And that's not debatable. I mean, you look at the actual numbers of people who voted in that election, there were 10 million additional voters than any previous presidential election. So it was different. The rules were different. The playing field was different. Now, that's different than saying there was organized cheating or evidence of a lot of fraud, but both sides are a little dishonest about this. It does mean that the rules were different. And Georgia, other states immediately after the election passed new, you know, election laws to roll back those COVID restrictions and make sure we got back to a baseline and kind of even playing field of what the rules were to pre-COVID rules. And it and those are in place as we move forward. So I think there's hope that it that, that won't be an issue as we move forward. And I don't think it will be.
Would Trump have won had there not been the numerous changes that you alluded to in the electoral process due to COVID?
That's hard to know. That's impossible to know. I can't speculate about that. I think it's fair to say that it would have been a different math and different numbers with different rules.
Okay. Border crisis, free health care. Come on over, bring your tired, bring your impoverished, bring people that want a better vision for themselves. Free health care, there's gift cards when we get in here. There's free transportation wherever you want to go in the country. There's housing. There's even money for living expenses. And if you happen to have children, oh my gosh, we'll take care of you, especially if they're born here. Now, there's been 8 million people nationally that have come across the border illegally. There's between, 100 to 300,000 people that have migrated to Utah specifically. I mean, the population of Washington County in southern Utah is like 191,000.
Right.
So this will be like, this will change the whole, the whole concept of Utah, the whole political perspective of Utah. It will have impact on us.
Yeah.
What are your feelings about the border crisis?
By the way, Steve, those numbers you just mentioned, those are people that we've encountered at the border, that we know about, that have presented themselves at the border station. That doesn't count the millions who've come across with coyotes or drug cartels that we don't know about. And it's probably double that, really, when you take the macro and look at the numbers. It is a disgrace. Right now, as of December and going into January, over 10,000 people a day were coming across the border. And, you know, the truth is the Biden administration has the tools to enforce the border if they wanted to, but they are willfully not doing that. They are intentionally giving away the sovereignty of our country, and it is disgraceful. It is shameful.
Why? What's the motive?
I think there is a fundamental desire to affect the demographics of this country, the voting demographics and otherwise. And by the way, this isn't just a domestic issue. This is a national security problem. Last year alone, we apprehended, again, the ones we know about, 159 people from the terror watch list were apprehended. Over 30,000 people with criminal records were apprehended. 27,000 pounds of fentanyl. Right now in our country, the leading cause of death between 18 to 45 year olds is fentanyl overdose. And that is a direct result of a decision to not enforce the border. So we have got to lock the border down. There are definitely changes in policy that need to be made to amnesty applications and how that's handled. But before you even get there, we need to start with a secure border. And when you say border, you're talking about a whole system. It's not just, you know, we say a wall. It includes walls in high population urban areas. They've been proven to be effective. We've got to get walls up in those areas. But it also includes technology, high-powered cameras, high-powered lighting, includes infrastructure like access roads to remote parts of the border so our agents can get there to actually enforce the border. So it's a whole system that needs to be put in place and locked down, and we need to start by locking down that border.
Do you agree with President Trump's stay in Mexico policy?
Absolutely. That, you know, and that's a great example because we have a sample size during COVID where that one policy, stay in Mexico, the difference that made in the numbers. You know, right now what's happening is anyone can apply for amnesty and then get a work permit, come into the country and wait for their amnesty hearing. Well, many of those people we never see again. Most of those people we never see again. They should wait in their home country. That has been proven through that time during COVID that affects the numbers in a huge way. So that's one part of it that definitely should be put back in place.
Congressman John Curtis founded the Conservative Climate Caucus during his tenure as our Utah representative, with the primary aim of educating and changing misconceptions that many legislators have about traditional fossil fuel extraction methods. As our representative, would you continue to support this organization, and would you be a part of that organization? What are your feelings about fossil fuels and extraction?
Here's my overriding feeling, and it's a strong one. There's no better correlation in the American economy than that between a booming energy sector and a booming American economy. We need a booming energy sector. We need domestic energy independence, both for economic reasons and for national security reasons. I am all for eliminating permit restrictions, excessive lawsuits, all of the junk, all of the opposition that slows down progress at us accessing our energy, both on federal lands and otherwise. And by the way, it's not just oil and gas anymore, and this is important for Utah. Rare earth minerals are the new important resource that we have abundantly here in Utah and need to start injecting into these conversations. That's important too. Look, radical extreme environmentalism is not doing any good for this country. It's a fear tactic designed to destroy our economy, and that's what we've seen. That's the objective behind it. I applaud Congressman Curtis for wanting to make sure that there was a conservative voice at the table to educate on these issues. Certainly to the degree that caucus does that, I will be supportive of them. But and I appreciate Congressman Curtis's passion for that. I'd much rather be on the House Energy and Commerce Committee fighting for the energy producers in Utah and in this country. So that would be my priority.
What are your thoughts on global warming?
I think some man-made global warming is real, certainly, but the consequences of that are much less clear, and the liberal left remedies for that would destroy our economy, and they're completely out of proportion with anything constructive there. So I approach that very warily, and I think there's much greater diversity of opinion on that than is acceded to by the left. And so I think it's important to have watchdogs in Congress calling out truth and error in that regard.
One of those efforts that you were talking about is the 2030 and 2050 plans, where it would be proposed to reduce emissions by 45% by the year 2030 and net zero by the year 2050. What are your feelings on those two plans?
Couple points on that. One is it's unrealistic. Second is I think America needs to get out of these global climate pacts that call for these types of restrictions on us while allowing China and India and other third world countries to basically not have the same restrictions. It's ridiculous, and it doesn't make logical sense in terms of its impact on the climate to the extent that impacts it. So I am not for agreeing to global pacts on the climate. I'm glad President Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Accords. And that's true for just about any global climate pact. It ends up handcuffing the United States and not doing so for some of our global, frankly, antagonists, which we can call China and Russia and others currently.
I just went down to renew my insurance for my business yesterday. It had increased by about 18%. Inflation Reduction Act, how has that affected our economy?
It's been a disaster. It has done the exact opposite. And this isn't just a partisan issue. All economists agree that the spending binge of the Biden administration, $4 trillion over pre-COVID budget baselines, if you include the Inflation Reduction Act and the American Rescue Act and so on, $4 trillion, that money was directly injected into the economy. Much of it, by the way, to green projects that
and to Biden supporters.
Biden supporters. That directly led to the worst inflation in 50 years. That inflation is strangling American families. And can, no matter what the media is trying to spin to us, it is continuing to strangle American families. Not only that, it led to the most rapid escalation in interest rates that we've seen in the last 30 years. And that has devastated our housing industry. It's devastated our Utah economy, the tech economy, Silicon Slopes economy that we deal with a lot in Utah Valley. That's been devastated. There are all kinds of effects that flow from that kind of irresponsible spending, the resulting inflation, the resulting escalation in interest rates at a way too rapid pace. It's devastated our economy. And that's one of the interesting things that's happening right now is the Biden administration and the left are gaslighting the American people. They're telling people that the economy's great, the numbers look good. American families know better. The average voter knows that the economy is rough, and they're feeling the effects of that. Inflation is the most difficult economic force that exists in any economy, and we're seeing it for the first time really in 50 years since the Carter administration.
Case Lawrence, you will be attending the Lincoln Day dinner tonight in Utah County. You're going to be asked this an awful lot. Why should I vote for you?
You should vote for me because I am the best position to go represent this district on the national stage and fight for conservative policies and not just be a representative, but be a leader among other representatives to get things done for Utah, for the 3rd District, and for the conservative movement in America.
One follow-up question. How would you propose to be a better representative for rural Utah communities like the Uinta Basin?
I think the number one issue here in the Uinta Basin is the growth and diversity of your economy here. That needs to happen. You've got some great building blocks here, including the energy industry, oil and gas, I think rare earth minerals as well. So there's a lot to work from and build from. There needs to be a priority of helping get the infrastructure to diversify and grow this economy, including the Uinta Rail Basin Project, which is important for this area. If there's a way to get that back on track, no pun intended, we need to do that. And we need to diversify this economy.
All right. Utah's 3rd Congressional District candidate, Case Lawrence, has been with us in studio here at Evans Family Media. He's here in the Uinta Basin today for the Uinta GOP Lincoln Day dinner. Case Lawrence, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
All right, I'm Steve Evans with Evans Family Media.